to the appropriation bill, entitled Building Opportunities for Our Own, Our Common Future. But before I do so, Mr. Speaker, I know that you have already recognized them, but I just want in my own capacity to recognize the teachers and the students from the Bonfair Prep primary school or school. And I just wanted to say that I did have a few discussions with some of the students, and I won't say what one of the students told me, but I just want to inform the students that you may hear arguments, but listening to arguments does not always mean that people are fighting. Arguments are important for the daily discourse that human beings will have, because through argument you may decide to change your position on a particular issue. And that is part of the education system, so I just want to inform the young people that sometimes you may argue or you may say something that sounds a bit harsh, but that is part of life, and we grow from that. Also, Mr. Speaker, with your permission, I just want to, while I have already done so formally, I just want to wish all Saint Lucians a happy reading month or happy literacy month. And we know yesterday was reading day, Saint Lucia reads, but I just want to keep encouraging all parents, especially fathers, to read to their children, because that will benefit our country tremendously as we continue to develop. Mr. Speaker, I just want to add a little more information to some of the policy issues that the Minister for Finance presented in his own appropriation bill. I want to start with, and during my presentation or contribution, I will address some of the issues or respond to the best of my ability to some of the issues raised by the member for NICU South, the immediate past Minister for Education. So I know you'd be very aware of most of the initiatives in the budget for this year, because most of these initiatives, some of them would have begun under his watch. And I would answer some of the questions that he asked, and I think it's only fair to answer. But I think also he may just have the answers, but he might choose not to give that. But I just want to tell him that I will respond to some of the questions that he asked. Mr. Speaker, in the Minister of Finance's presentation, he talks about universal early childhood education. Clearly, this administration is very keen on ensuring that there's a policy that guides early childhood development in this country. I think we've been talking about early childhood education, but we must put it in a broader context to talk about early childhood development. Because when we talk about early childhood development, we're talking about not just issues of education for children between the age 0 to 3. We're talking about issues, health issues. We talk about nutrition issues. And these are very critical points for early childhood education. Because if our children are not properly fed between those ages also, if the nutrition that they receive, the health care that they receive, is not adequate or appropriate, that itself will have a negative impact on the education of these children. So when we talk about universal early childhood development, it is the direction that this administration wants to take to ensure that by the time our children get to the kindergarten classes, that they would have been properly prepared, sensitized, properly been taken care of, so that we could have minimal problems within the education system. And most of these things will not happen within 5 months, Mr. Speaker. It's planning by this administration to ensure that the policy is in place and to make sure that we continue some programs that are already in that direction. And I know the member for NICU South ask about the Roving Care Program, which is one component of early childhood education. I just want to inform, I just wanted to ask the member, there are sometimes we talk about things, because in this house, I was in this house for the last 5 years, and I did ask a lot of questions about the roving caregivers program, and the then Minister for Education hardly responded to some of these questions, because in particular we knew that the program was going to come to an end sometime last year. And we asked the questions about what preparations were put in place at the time to ensure that program was kept alive. Because that program in particular in the rural areas like in Ancillary Canneries, where many parents do not have the resources to ensure that the children in that category, the age group 0 to 3, been taken care of, that program met the needs of these people in those areas where parents are deprived. And I just wanted to say that I think sometimes it's a bit hypocritical for us to ask questions that we know the answers to. And I want to say to the member for Miku South, what interventions did you make before in preparation for the collapse of the funding that was there for the RCP? Because we were inundated, or we were told many times that certain things were not right at the ministry, that the ministry was not looking at that program properly, because there was a breakdown in communication between those who funded that program and the then Ministry of Education. And therefore, my question to him is, or my point to him is, Mr. Member, sometimes we must not just 5 months, in 5 months, very little has changed between the funding for that program and what exists now. But I just want to assure St. Lucians that the Roving Caregivers Program will be adequately financed by this government. It will be financed by this government. The Minister of Finance has assured the Ministry of Education that once the proper information is sent, this program will be financed. So I just want the member for Miku South to be aware that this will happen. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance talked about partial zoning of secondary schools. And I think, as the former minister, the member for Miku South, said, this thing has to be properly thought through, thought out, because you must ensure that the word that I have used there before is equity, that there is equity in the system. While I heard the member for Miku South, and I appreciate him disclosing some of the options that we should use for partial zoning, I just want to say that it is something that the Ministry of Education, Ministry for Education, Human Resource Development and Labor will ensure happens when partial zoning is implemented, and hopefully should be implemented in the academic year 2013-2014. One of the issues we need to think about as we implement partial zoning. Right now, students who are in primary school, Mr. Speaker, I think they have approximately 6 choices for secondary schools. Now, partial zoning, in my mind at the moment, will simply reduce the number of choices a parent has for his or her child. In that, and Mr. Speaker, this is not a final version of what the policy may be, but I'm just giving one option. In the partial zoning concept, you must still allow parents that element of choice. This is what human life or the human condition is about, choices. But parents will have, at the moment for me, for my position, 3 choices that they can make in terms of where do they want their children to go to school. For example, the parents can make choices, school A, school B, school C. But then it is them for the Ministry of Education to decide that if you have your child has not met the requirements for these choices A, B, and C, then it is for the government of St. Lucia to decide, instead of moving children all over the country, keep children within their communities as much as possible. In that way, Mr. Speaker, We will reduce on the amount of money that the government of St. Lucia spends in transportation subsidies. Because three choices is a huge number of choices that we make. Mr. Speaker, I say that because we have children who are coming from my constituency, communities like Marigold. There is a school in Marigold. And you have to move a child from Marigold all the way to Babono or to Grozile to school. Most of these parents cannot meet the transportation costs involved in moving their children through this area, this geographic area. And there is no real good reason for a child who is in Marigold sometimes going all the way to Grozile to school. I think we can see the logic of having partial zoning. I know that the member for Middlesex talked about it, and I just want to say that, yes, I agree with you, that you must ensure that all the schools have the necessary requirements, the necessary equipment, because it will be unfair for you to send a child to a school that does not have the equipment. But I must reassure this House that the work that the government of St. Lucia has done over the last 15 years, it is to ensure that all schools in this country would have similar conditions under which children will be schooled in this country. Mr. Speaker, I can tell you that there are schools, because in our minds in this country, when people think about schools in this country and partial zoning, most people think that what's going to happen is the so-called traditional flag schools, flagship schools like St. Mary's College or St. Joseph's Convent or the others like Beaufort, that these schools will be only given to certain people. But this is what we have, a meritocracy, an academic meritocracy, where our children have always been put in schools based on the score on the common entrance exam. That will still carry, but the point is, we will give you choices, because you do not expect everybody to go to St. Mary's College, St. Joseph's Convent, the Beaufort campus, the Beaufort Secondary School, which is campus A and B, as well as now the other leading schools in our country. But I want to make the point that some of the newer schools are better equipped than some of the schools that we think are the traditional big schools in this country. In fact, yes, you want me to say that again, member? Some of the newer schools in this country are better equipped than some of what we think of the traditional flagship schools. And some of these schools were built by the Labour administration of 1997 to 2006. One of the other things that we need to talk about in terms of partial zoning is the quality of the teacher quality in our schools. Really, Mr. Speaker, sometimes some of the teachers are better trained in some of the schools that we think are at the lower end of that spectrum. In present day St. Lucia, it might be that the teachers receive children who have less academic credentials. But some of our teachers in some of the newer schools are better trained academically than some of our teachers in the what we call the top schools. And therefore, in the last 15 years, successive governments, or maybe 20 years, successive governments in this country has ensured that the teacher quality in our country is improved. Because right now, Mr. Speaker, you can find almost 50% of the staff, or maybe 40%, I should say, of the staff in every school with graduate degrees. And therefore, it is very much not an issue for us to begin to think of partial zoning in our country. Essentially, as I said, partial zoning will help to reduce the burden to government on transportation subsidies. In that way, the savings in that regard can go to other areas in education, such as the school feeding program and the other equipment that we will need in schools. So I want the member for Miku South to know that 5 months, a few things will change, but 5 months means we are building on some of the work that he did. and we are building on what was put there since 1997. So in terms of partial zoning, the Ministry for Education of Education will make statements when that policy has been finalized, and the schools and the principals, the schools, the parents, everybody in this country will know what the policy is and what is the mechanism that would move children from primary school to secondary school. Mr. Speaker, the Minister for Finance also talks about another policy shift, that is the removal or the return of sixth form to the secondary schools. Again, there are parallel arguments that I have already made with regard to the zoning, partial zoning concept. One of these arguments would be what I said, that some of the schools in this country, they have already been equipped with the best equipment to serve the secondary education sector. Mr. Speaker, I heard that there are challenges. Everything in life has challenges. But there is no big problem so much about the secondary nature of the A-level program. The A-level program is essentially a secondary program. And most of our teachers in the secondary school, having been properly trained, and most of them carrying graduate degrees, can teach the secondary program up to the sixth form. I think the member from Microsoft made a good point, that what we have to do is to ensure that we have the right model. And again, you have to look at various models, whether you decide to have, as you said, an institute in the north and one in the south, because Beaufort Campus B is an excellent example for this country on what sixth form really, what really happens at the sixth form level in our school. I think Beaufort is a shining example. Their results have been impeccable. They've been great to talk about when you look at how our students perform at the sixth form level at Campus B in Beaufort. So I also want to say that it's a model, it's the model that we have to agree upon. The idea of whether or not we decide to have a few schools in the north, one or two schools in the west of the country, one or two schools in the east, and some schools in the north. You cannot break the sixth form, Mr. Speaker, back to every secondary school. It would not be a wise decision. So, but again, these are the issues that the technical people, along with other stakeholders in education, and everybody is a stakeholder, as I said before, will decide upon. So we want the member from Microsoft to be rest assured that even his contribution will be very much respected in that regard, because there is a role for all of us to play in the education system of our country. Mr. Speaker, I know that there are a number of reasons why we need to remove the sixth form from Sir Lewis Community College. One of the rationales would be Sir Lewis Community College is undergoing transformation. Yes, it will have to undergo transformation. And it will have to create more opportunities for persons who want to do programs at the community level, college level. For example, Mr. Speaker, the University of the West Indies had a franchise program with Sir Arthur. And the importance of that program to a lot of St. Lucians would be that you could have done the first 2 years of a social science degree right at Sir Arthur, and to spend 1 year at St. Augustine to complete your program. But this had almost disappeared because the last government did not nurture that program. Because talking about the cost of education, education is a very costly endeavor. If a young St. Lucian chooses to get a degree from UWI in one of the social sciences, and that young St. Lucian can spend 2 years at home through a program run at Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, Why aren't we encouraging that program at Safa, and to just make sure that that student only spends 1 year at UWI in St. Augustine? But this program almost vanished. But I want the Honorable House to know that in discussion with UWI, we will ensure that this program gets back a firm footing at Safa to ensure that young people, the cost of education for our young people is reduced considerably. Mr. Speaker, right now we're talking about UWI Open Campus, and there is a lot to be said about this, that our young people can take advantage again of programs at UWI where you do not necessarily have to go to one of the physical campuses. You can do a program right here with the Open Campus, and you can graduate with your degree, and it's a degree of quality. Mr. Speaker, we have to look for many different formats to educate our people up to the tertiary level. And that is one of the things that we hope, if you remove the sixth form in Safa, you will create space for Safa to begin to plan other programs that they need to think about. Let me, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give an example. Right now, we're talking about the hospitality industry. If Safa, in the last few years, would have thought about the programs they could have run for young people who have either been out of primary school or out of secondary school to be trained for the hospitality industry, the space at Safa, if that was created, the number of young people who could have been trained in different programs at Safa would have been tremendous. Because right now, there's a lot of jobs in the hospitality industry, especially in terms of the cruise sector. And Safa could pick up a lot of these programs and to prepare young people for most of these programs. Mr. Speaker, in technology, basic things that we sometimes do not think about, Safa could prepare a lot of our young people in those things. For example, Mr. Speaker, even in the same cruise in tourism industry, we're talking about basic things like in terms of maintenance, yacht maintenance. Basic programs that we could have had Safa delivering to ensure that the mega yachts that we say we want to help bring to our country, that there will be people who can do the basic maintenance on these yachts when they arrive in our country. We have to think outside of the box. We have to begin to incorporate some of the things that we see happening outside, because we do not always have to send our young people outside of St. Lucia to prepare them for these basic programs that we can do right here in our country. And these are some of the roles that Safa must engage in. Mr. Speaker, a lot of people talk about lifelong education. People will move 3-4 careers in a lifetime. Safa can be that catalyst that helps create the environment for most of the persons who would want to retool themselves to do something besides what they were trained to do at university or somewhere else before. Safa must think about these issues, Mr. Speaker. And that's what we want Safa. We want the space at Safa to begin to retool our people. There are a number of people who have had degrees in certain fields, but they may want to retool to another area. And we have to make Safa do these things, Mr. Speaker. So the space is needed to do many of the programs. Mr. Speaker, we need Safa to become an institution of quality. I think I heard a former minister of education say it is very easy to take a pen and to sign and make St. Lucia have University of St. Lucia, but it's the quality of the program that you have to worry about. You do not just want programs and programs, but you must make sure you have programs of quality in our country. Mr. Speaker, just to go back a bit, I must tell you that when we move the sixth form back to the secondary schools, it will help with the discipline in our secondary schools, because there will be more senior students who can handle some of the disciplinary problems to help the administration of the school. Those who were fortunate, Mr. Speaker, to be at the then St. Mary's College in the 60s and the 70s in sixth form, they knew what that meant. They saw the importance of the senior students to help with the discipline in the school. We're not saying that this is the main reason you're moving it back, but that is an advantage. It's a benefit to move the students back into the sixth form. Mr. Speaker, although we did not really, the Prime Minister in his speech didn't talk too much about it, but one of the areas that we have to also look at in terms of sixth form is whether we stay with the traditional GCE levels or we move to the Caribbean Advanced Proficiency Exam. Okay. That program is our very own. We can go back to the 1979-1980 era when people were worried about CXE replacing GCU level. But CXE has proven, the CXE as an institution has proven to be a shining light in terms in the world in terms of qualifications for secondary school students. And we need to make sure that we are not, I think we are about the only country except, well, let me tell you, we're the only country who has not made that shift to KIPP. The only school in this country, well, SAFA is not doing it, but Viewport Campus B is writing KIPP. And all the teachers who mark this KIPP exam from St. Lucia, they teach at the sixth form level. So therefore, it makes no sense for us, our people, they're already prepared to assess and to evaluate these exams, yet our children are not writing this exam. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I would like to just inform that there is going to be discussion, in fact, there's been discussion with CXC. CXC is going to send a team, hence in Lucia, to begin to sensitize the St. Lucian populace about the importance of the KIPP exam. Mr. Speaker, on the SALCC, I want to just inform the member from Mr. South this question. What is the policy on Sir Arthur Lewis Community College? This government is a very thorough government. It's a government that believes that it will only be taking decisions based on information. That is what you do. You have to look at what is the information. Some consultancies were given off to look at how to transform Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, and it's the intention of this government to allow the new board of governors to receive those reports, to study these reports, and to inform the government about the implications and where are we going in terms of the transformation of SAFA. Therefore, as soon as that procedure and that process has been finalized, I can assure the member from Middle South that there will be policy pronouncements from this government on where Sir Arthur Lewis Community College is finally headed. We know one thing about Sir Arthur. Sir Arthur will become a better institution under this government. We can assure you that we will always look to ensure that the strides that have been achieved by successive governments with regard to Sir Arthur, that this government will build on the quality, because Sir Arthur continues to be a quality institution in the OECS. Its students are given priority when they apply to schools in North America or in the United Kingdom. So we are very proud of SAFA, but we want to make sure that SAFA becomes an even better institution. Mr. Speaker, I want to talk a little about the $500 voucher program that the Minister for Finance spoke about. Again, this administration will always stick to our blueprint for growth. Mr. Speaker, our manifesto is what our government has articulated. It will not always achieve everything that it plans to. Human beings know that there are limitations. But this government, in keeping with this blueprint for growth, will implement one of the programs down there, which is the $500 one-off contribution for parents whose students will enter secondary school. Why is that important, Mr. Speaker? Somebody may ask. When I was a school child in primary school, if there were 40 children in my class at the Denshiswa Combined School, only 8 of us could get acceptance or entrance into a secondary school. You think the other 32 children were not as intelligent or more intelligent than some of us, the 8 of us who went through? I think some of them may have been. But the opportunities were not there for them. So while we can talk about universal secondary education, which was achieved in 2006, one of the spin-offs, or one of the problems you'd have with universal secondary education is, while you had met the issue of accessibility to secondary education, the next question would be the affordability. Because some parents, the issue of affordability will come up, because some parents, while they are very happy to have their children go into a secondary school, the various costs implied in that new life means that some of the parents would say, I just can't send my child. So the Minister for Finance has made an allocation of $2 million in the Education Access Fund to ensure that every child who is deprived or disadvantaged financially will get support under that program. And as we've said, and the Minister for Finance said, there will be a proper mechanism. And I encourage the member for Miku South, who is the immediate past Minister for Education, if he has any suggestions as to how we can do it, that I am free and very happy to take his suggestion. Because I believe that you need to consult those who have gone before you. So Minister, member for Miku South, you are free to let me have your ideas on how we can implement it. But I can assure you that there will be equity and it will go to the students who most need it. We will not, I want to say, Mr. Speaker, we will not use that money the way it was used in 2011. Because it's a crying shame how that money that was put under the Education Access Fund for 2011-2012, how that money was used for political campaigning in this country. We ought never to use the funds that are allocated for education towards political sensitization in terms of party politics. And it is a crying shame what happened under that Education Access Fund in the last year. Mr. Speaker, we talk about the Ministry of Education, Human Resource Development, and Labor. We're talking about education enhancement through ICT programs. Mr. Speaker, there are two ongoing programs right now in the Ministry of Education, Human Resource Development in that regard. One of the programs is, you heard the Minister for Finance talk about some $12.3 million allocated to be used this year. One of the programs is an EU program, an EU finance program. And that program, the funds given in under that program, we really want to say thank you to the European Union for this. And yesterday, as I was just saying this, yesterday was recognized as European Union Day, Europe Day. And the government of St. Lucia, along with the European Union delegates, who are right here in this house, so I want to really say thank you to them, Mr. Speaker, through you. The government and the delegation, along with other St. Lucians, met at the new National Hospital, which has not been completed, but it's an EU project, and as the EU ambassador said last night, it is one of the biggest investments of the EU in the OECD. And I think it just speaks to the EU realizing that St. Lucia is a very important and very committed member or partner in development. And we want to say thank you And here we have an EU ICT program, Mr. Speaker. That program began sometime 2010, I think. 2009, thank you. 2009. And that program is going to put, it will be run under three areas, Mr. Speaker, three key components. And I just want to find, let me just find, Mr. Speaker, the issues under that for you, just to see. One, it will talk about the enhancement of quality spaces, that is to put in spaces in within the educational system. And we're talking about the libraries, the schools, especially the rural schools. Because I think the whole idea was not just for school children, but to bring the community to take part in that project. What we're saying here, Mr. Speaker, is if the computers are put, let's say, in Bhutan, which I think one of the first schools to have equipment under that program, that the community will also share the facilities when the school children are not using that facility. Because, Mr. Speaker, when you introduce children to any technology, if you introduce their parents to the technology, you are ensuring that the children will use that technology wisely. I know under that program you have a number of different components, but I want to say that essentially it was meant to boost up the rural sector of our country, but rural in terms of St. Lucia does not always mean schools outside of Castries, because there are schools within the Castries area, in areas of Castries, that you can consider rural. So I think that I want some people to realize that it's not always schools outside of Castries or outside of Beaufort Town. It may mean schools just within Castries also. So somebody says Babuna. We will take care of all the schools that you are calling members. But I just want to say there are two programs ongoing on the ICT, under ICT initiatives. The second one is a program called the INCRED program. Mr. Speaker, that program is a useful program. I have said it before, it's a parallel program with the EU ICT enhancement program. But one of the things I find about these two programs is that these two programs, Mr. Speaker, they are running at the same time, and yet there is no real communication between these two programs. And it simply speaks to the fact that we need to ensure that all programs that we run through the Ministry of Education or any ministry of government, that the programs find synergy among themselves. Because one of the problems I have with these two programs, Mr. Speaker, and I just want to say is, I think the capacity building in terms of our teachers, these programs really should have started, first of all, with building capacity. That is, ensuring that our teachers were prepared in terms of ICT before the equipment got into the schools. Because right now you can have equipment in the schools, but you have to talk about what programs are you running on this equipment. What's the content on this program? And Mr. Speaker, that program will be a very good program for us under our laptop initiative, that we are, as a government, we are committed to providing a laptop to every secondary school child in this country. And if we have all the necessary infrastructure put in place and all the preparation, implementing the laptop initiative will be a lot easier for the education system. And therefore, I just want to say that the Ministry of Education, Human Resource Development and Labour, under my watch, will ensure that these two programs, the EU ICT program and the INCRED program, that these programs, they are totally put together, and that these programs are going to reach the goals and aims that they were meant for. Mr. Speaker, another program that is ongoing in the Ministry of Education, and the Minister of Finance talked about it, is the BEEP program. The BEEP program really is an acronym to mean Basic Education Enhancement Program. Now, what's the whole objective of this program? If you reach universal secondary education, you need to begin to look at the school plant and to begin to strengthen that school plant. And not just strengthen the school plant, but you need also, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that the teacher capacity is also strengthened. Teaching is a profession that will always have continuous professional development. In fact, every profession does. But teaching in particular, there is always going to be people asking for new things to be put on the curriculum in schools. In fact, the schools do not exist in a vacuum. Schools exist to take care of what society wants to do. While school is essentially a place to keep young people while they are growing, but schools will have to always respond to the demands of society. And therefore, once we've met the USE, which is Universal Secondary Education, there is a need now to begin to relook at the school plan to ensure that there is adequate space for the children that you are bringing into secondary school. And Mr. Speaker, while I am on adequate space, I need to address an issue about that I should have addressed just a little earlier. This issue about Grand Rivière Secondary School and the Marigot Secondary School not having Form 1 and Form 2s. Mr. Speaker, statistics from the Ministry of Education Examination Statistics Department or unit shows what the member from Meeku South says, that there are no Form 1s and Form 2s in those two schools. But Mr. Speaker, I want the member from Meeku South to be candid and be truthful. Commandment number 9 says, do not bear false witness. If there are no Form 1s and Form 2s in the schools, the immediate past minister should tell us what the reason for that was. Because we are a country and we should have no secrets about what the policy on education is. From my understanding, Mr. Speaker, the government, the last government administration, had its own plan on how they wanted to use these two schools for various purposes. But I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, and I can inform the country, that not while I am parliamentary rep for Castries South, that Marigot Secondary School would not be a secondary school in this country. That's what it was built for. The last Labour administration, having listened to the World Bank on how it was financing projects for education, the last Labour administration ensured that every area in zone in this country had a secondary school to respond to the growing needs of secondary education in our country. And I want to say that Marigot Secondary School will continue being a secondary school in this country because it was meant to be exactly that. And so when I hear that Grand Rivière doesn't have children in Form 1 and Form 2, and there's a school which is just about maybe 10, 15 minutes away, which is the Clendon Mason Secondary School, is bursting at the seams, so much so that the BEEP program itself is building a new block to that school. That tells you that Grand Rivière is still an important school. It means we need not overburden one set of schools and then we close down other schools because we have fancy ideas. Because I can speak about George Charles also. George Charles has more students that they can really accommodate at this time in Form 1. And Marigot has no children in Form 1. So when I had the argument that parents did not opt for Marigot and Grand Rivière, Mr. Speaker, it's a rhetorical question, but Mr. Speaker, do you really think that there are parents in Marigot who would bypass Marigot and then one of the newest schools in our country and ask for their child to be put at Judge Charles where we have not put in all the requisite equipment for that school? The member for Miku South, it's a rhetorical question. I don't think St. Lucians, if a parent in Marigold would say, I'd rather my child go all the way to Goodland when that child could go.
And remember, you have 15 minutes remaining to complete your contribution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, so while I address the BEEP program, this program has a number of components also, and I'm very pleased that the program, while it was intended to address some 8 schools, I think it has now moved to address 12 schools in our country. And I can assure the members in this House that we know that the school plant in our country needs extensive work. Some schools are not even been addressed under some of the programs we have, but we can assure members in this chamber, Mr. Speaker, that we recognize that all our schools that need assistance will be dealt with. Because when I hear Miku in particular had schools that are crying now, I keep reminding members in this House that I was putting a case in for Miku as early as 2009 in this House. Because I am not one who believes that you only cry out for the people you represent. All St. Lucians are important to all of us. And so, Mr. Speaker, I can assure you that even while I'm the parliamentary rep for Castro South, if Cicero Combined School, if its needs are less urgent than another school, I will attend to the school that is more urgent. Because all the children in this country are our children. And we did not begin to think about where the government holds a constituency. This is not the aim of the government. The aim of the government is to make sure the resources of our country are equitably distributed. So the member from Miku South and Miku North will be very happy to know that this government will ensure that the Miku Secondary, Miku Infant School is taken care in this financial year. And while we are aware that there will be need to strengthen all the schools that I'm hearing, Greece and Marsha, but I can assure members that the ministry under the new leadership will ensure that every school gets its fair due in our country. Because you must not always sit in the House, stand in the House, and only because you're in opposition now to think that anything has changed. I'm hearing issues sometimes, Mr. Speaker, with your latitude here. When we talk about the health center in Miku, this discussion, Mr. Speaker, was raised in this House as early as 2007, when this government, the last government, took office, and they let it linger. They punished some people for their political views, and they did nothing for the people of Miku when it came to health care. And I could imagine what the people of Miku are thinking right now. But I can assure them that I'm sure the Minister for Health will ensure that as a philosophy of this government, we do not always think about only those who voted for certain political parties. We will take care of the needs of our country as the need arises. Mr. Speaker, there are a number of programs that will run under through the Ministry of Education, because with one of the agencies, the NSDC Skills Center, NSDC, which is the National Skills Development Center, we're talking about the OECF for Inclusive Growth project. This program is a matter of building on the human resource capacity of our country, as well as providing employment for our young people. The government thrust on reducing youth unemployment will be channeled in the main through the NSDC center in the financial year. The Minister of Finance talked about the SMILES program for single mothers in life skill enhancement. And I want to just say that as the minister under whom portfolio and SDC Falls will ensure that this program actually targets the people for whom it was intended. Mr. Speaker, one of the things we need to do with our foreign, our embassies, we call them our consulates, is to get our foreign consulates to also help the Ministry of Education with its human resource development capacity. Because some of our consulates need to also work together with the ministry to source scholarships for our young people in this country. It makes no sense for us to have our embassies, our consulates out there, not really tapping into opportunities that are available in the host countries to see how our young people can get opportunities for further education. So I really want to say that it's an area under human resource development that I want to make sure that our government encourages our embassies, our consulates overseas, to look at how we can tap into some of the resources that are available out there that we may not know of to help our young people in our development. Mr. Speaker, this government is a government of conscience. It's a government with a social responsibility, and that should be the aim of every government, to be conscious of the needs of our people. And I see over $70 million allocated by the Minister for Finance for the creation of jobs, for employment, and for work in this country. So I commend the Minister for Finance for putting so much under the various programs to make sure we create employment in our country. As I said at the beginning, we are a government that will stick to our articulation, what we articulate and what we put in a manifesto. If you, Mr. Speaker, permit me to say that if you were to look at the last four manifestos produced by this government, you will see that the government can say it has achieved almost 90% of the things that it says that it will do. Starting in 1997 with the contract of peace, and looking today now at our blueprint for growth in this country. I want to just talk a little, as I end, on the implementation of the value-added tax in our country. I want to commend this government for having the moral courage to implement the VAT. We must not hide behind circumstances. We all agree that it is necessary for us to do it. We are aware that there will be challenges. But whether we keep postponing it every year, we are only postponing a date with something that we just cannot afford. So I must say that I commend the Minister of Finance, and the Minister has ensured that under the legislation that will be put in place for the value-added tax, that the poor people of this country will be cushioned from a lot of the strains that may come on the implementation of that. But Mr. Speaker, I must say that we have not understood everything that we need to about that. It is a learning process. But as we go through, we'll realize that allocations have been made to ensure that the good that the majority of the poor people of this country, and especially in Kashmir South, because Kashmir South may wear Kashmir, but Kashmir South is one of those constituencies that has a lot of disadvantage and financially challenged people in this country. So I want to commend the Minister for being courageous enough and for building on the work of the last government, because the last government, as the Minister of Finance did say, they had implemented a VAT office. They had put together various mechanisms to ensure that St. Lucians were adequately sensitized towards the implementation of VAT. And therefore, what we must do as a country is, as we implement the VAT, to find ways to ensure that as we put together all the various nuisance taxes that our people have to face, that we will make sure that as we look at it a year from now, 18 months from now, that we will ensure that it meets the needs of our people. Mr. Speaker, I also want to say something on the construction sector.
Honourable Member, you have 5 minutes left to conclude your contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to say that I am heartened by the various packages, the various announcements made by the Minister for Finance as he tries to stimulate the economy of our country, and by saying that he would remove certain measures on certain issues, on certain materials that are needed for construction in our country, like sand and cement, to allow people to build their homes, to allow businesses to do certain things in this country. Mr. Speaker, I'm almost certain that some people in my constituency will be very happy to know that they will be able to engage in some construction activity and that they will be getting, hopefully, some loans for construction at a lower rate than is presently, as it presently exists in our country. So I know, Mr. Speaker, that there will be others who will speak more specifically to these areas. But I wanted to say that I want to thank the Minister for Finance and for my parliamentary colleagues for the discussion that has gone on so far with regard to the estimates and to the appropriation bill for the year 2012-2013. And Mr. Speaker, as I end, I want to assure all Saint Lucians that under my watch, the Ministry for Education, Human Resource Development and Labour will ensure that the funds allocated to the Ministry for the financial year 2012-2013, that these funds are used for the purpose for which they were allocated, and to see that every member of this house and every child in this country will benefit from the programs of the Ministry of Education, Human Resource Development and Labour. And Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to the Appropriation Bill 2012-2013. I thank you.